Okay, it's 6 o'clock on my watch, so we'll call a work session to order. Let me just get rid of, I know you had something that you wanted to talk about, but we'll put GBAC on here because he's working.
Okay.
All right, just we'll get him in and get him on.
Great.
Mr. Sweet.
Hey, sir. Gentlemen, thank you. Is this on? Do I need to use this?
No.
We can hear you.
You can come up if you want.
Thanks. Good. Thank you for allowing me to come here. My name is Bob Sweet. I'm the vice president of the Greater Baltimore Ambulance Corps. Our president, Mark Procopio, would love to be here, but he decided he'd get COVID instead. So he's out with his team. Why am I here? We understand that there is a potential for some ARPA money, and we think GBAC is a good prospect for some of that money. And I want to tell you why. First of all, I don't know if you know much about GBAC, but this is our 60th anniversary as a volunteer 501c3 not-for-profit. And to be very straightforward, we can't do it all with volunteers, so we have about 13 paid staff, and about half again as many volunteers. So we are still considered an organization that's a volunteer organization. So what I picture GBAC as is kind of like a three-legged emergency stool, at least in our community. You've got fire, you've got police, and then you've got EMS. And EMS is the only one, as you know, that receives zero tax monies. We have to come up with the money to keep our operations going all by ourselves. And just so you're aware, since 2019, our costs, like everybody else's, has gone up 26%. Everything's gone. Ambulances now cost $160,000 each, and that's without the equipment in it. So when you see one of those things going down the road, the staff included, you're looking at about $250,000 for a rig going down the street. GBAC has five of those, and we need to replace one every year, given the mileage that we put on. We do about 5,000 calls a year. So think about driving your vehicle to the hospital in Syracuse 5,000 times a year. That means each ambulance goes 1,000 times every year. So we replace the oldest ambulance every year. Now it's about 18 months because we can't get them. So that's all to say that not only the money for labor, the benefits, and capital equipment, and materials in general have gone up considerably. We could certainly use the extra money, and certainly would be fantastic if we could get a brand new ambulance from the town of Lysander. So as some of you may know, I'm also on the zoning board, so I get the town magazine, and if you look at the last month's or last bi-monthly magazine, there's a great article in there about ARPA, and it specifically talks about not only EMS but emergency services as a good opportunity to give money to from ARPA. So I just want to make you aware that we're here. Or one of your three-legged stool services, and we can certainly use the money. Now, I don't want to mislead you. We're a solvent organization. Right? We're not here begging because we're on our last legs. But I really do think this could be a win-win, not only for the town board, but our community. You helping us, we helping them. I think the community would totally understand you offering us some ARPA money. That would be great. And I want to leave you with that we know of two other agencies in Central New York that have received ARPA money from their towns. One of them is Waves Ambulance. From the Camillus town, they received $100,000. So we're here asking to see what you can do. Do you guys have any questions for me?
Have you talked to the village as well, too, and Van Buren, since you're in Baldwinsville?
We have not. And we're not just in Baldwinsville, we cover,
Camillus, you know, too, yeah,
the whole thing. Yeah.
Right.
Van Buren, Lysander, parts of Geddes, you know, we're a large district. So, but we haven't gone there yet.
Okay. Well, you plan on going there and asking as well.
We do. We do. And we hope that you guys can be first so we can say, look what Lysander did for us.
Yep.
What's the annual budget at the GBAC? Do you know offhand?
I'd have to go check. I'd be happy to get you that information.
Yeah.
I don't know offhand.
Okay.
So how much would help you? What's the ask?
Well, the ask is that, thank you. The ask is that, you know, we spend $160,000 just for a blank ambulance every year. Now, last year, we actually had to get one that was actually being sold. It was new, but it wasn't what we ordered, because what we were ordered was a year out. And it got to the point where, because we took the one that was in stock, the other one showed up at the same time that we had on order for over a year. So we ended up having to pay for two ambulances at once. Big shot, right?
Well,
so,
and your income with,
yeah,
COVID, why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, well, I checked into that, Bob. COVID, we did not go down, but our expenses went crazy. The call volume actually went up, and as you guys may know, how we actually stay solvent is we have to bill the patients that we take in. Now, I won't get into a lot of depth here, but there are four types of patients. There are those that have private insurance, as many of us do. There are those that are on Medicare, those that are on Medicaid, and those that don't have any insurance at all. Obviously, the ones that we get the most money back for our invoices is the ones with private insurance. That's 15% of our call volume. And as you go down that spectrum, the income gets less and less and none, basically. So we write off a ton of money every year based on the different patient categories that we have to serve.
Plus, you don't get paid unless you transport.
Exactly. There is a good percentage of our calls where we'll go there, and for whatever reason, the patient doesn't want to go. They're going to go by themselves. We don't think they need to go, but bottom line, there's a good percentage that we're running to the scene and we don't.
So when you say you're hoping for a new rig, for lack of better,
that's what we're calling.
Okay, so you're hoping for a new rig. You mean with the help of all the municipalities that you service, right?
Well,
so if that number is five municipalities, and it's $250,000, 50 per, or, you know, some version of that. Is that what you're hoping to receive, something of that nature, or are you hoping for the town of Lysander to?
You know, the ask is whatever you feel like we deserve. You know, we would say, yeah, sure, give us the 250. But the ask is we would like to, whether it's with the other towns, and we have no idea, just like we have no idea what you would say. We could go to each town and they would say, sorry. So if you only give us a portion of that, well, it's going to help significantly. But to answer your question, yeah, it'd be great if we could get it all from one place, but that's unrealistic. I realize that.
I can't think of a more deserving agency than GBAC and this personal experience with that. And, you know, I say to myself every day, we are so lucky living here that we have GBAC. So if there's money sitting somewhere that can go here or there, you know, I would be one to say, sure, you know, let's absolutely consider GBAC. Having said that, you know, my concern here is what would happen if the ARPA money wasn't around, and you know, what's going on with your business plan? I don't want GBAC to fold up shop, so to speak, or not have enough ambulances to cart people around. So, you know, what happens when there's no more? I mean, so fine, we spend all of the ARPA money in the next 18 months or whatever it is, and then it's gone. Then what do we do? What are you going to do?
Well, we recognize this is a one-time opportunity, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, we are a solvent organization. Mm-hmm. We're not here begging because we're going to go out of business. Right? And I do appreciate your stance that I think our community is very fortunate to have the level of care that we have. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm a little biased. I've been doing this for 38 years as a volunteer. But yeah, we have a top-notch organization. You can ask anybody in the county, in EMS. They recognize GBAC as one of the best. Yeah, this is a one-time deal. We understand that. We're solvent. We're going to continue to make the money that we do, our income with our patients. Everybody's going to get sick eventually. You know, we're always going to have that income stream. But this is an opportunity for us. Right? If it wasn't there, I wouldn't be here.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Great.
Yeah, I recognize you have other opportunities. I hope we're well. Okay.
Great. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
All right, Bob. Thank thanks. Did you want to bring that other issue up?
Yeah. The issue that I would like to bring up is seeing if we can have a consensus or agreement on this board for joining with the other towns that are mounting a lawsuit against the state. I guess it's the state in terms of the Route 81 plan that's been adopted. And I think we have to fish or cut bait on this issue. I would, because I think there's a deadline in the middle, next week or the week after. I'm not sure about that, but it's coming up within the month of October.
I'm pretty sure it's next week. It's next before week. Our, it's before our next meeting.
The reason I feel strongly about joining this lawsuit is that of all the things we've ever considered on this town board, and I don't want to be too dramatic about this, but this is at the top of the list in terms of principle and fighting for the future of our community. If you believe, as I do and so many other people do, that the Route 81 proposal in terms of this community grid will be devastating to any of the traffic that comes from the northwest part of Onondaga County and then certainly beyond, the lawsuit, as I understand it, will be challenging the state to show proof that they actually considered alternatives and didn't just brush them off and say, yeah, fine, but we had this decision in place all along. And what's going through my mind right now is I can't believe that the state is doing what they're going to do, especially with the announcement yesterday with Micron coming onto the scene. I mean, 100,000 more people were going to be moving into Onondaga County within the next couple of years because of that plant, and God only knows, or who knows what kind of traffic is going to be generated by that facility. What irks me about this is that the city of Syracuse thinks it's their decision. This is an interstate. We all pay for this. People who live in Maine pay for this road. People who live in Georgia pay for this road. It's not just the city of Syracuse. If there were a loop road in our neck of the woods in the northwest quadrant, that would be maybe an alternative. But there isn't a loop road, and there never will be a loop road. And whether we win or lose with this lawsuit, and everybody says, oh, you can't win on this one, it's a matter of principle. Sometimes you have to stand up and fight. And you know, for the $10,000 or $15,000 it's going to cost, I will feel good that I tried to do something to stem this, to stop something that was, in my opinion, outrageously bad. So I would like to bring it to a vote, just so we fish or cut bait, and we do that tonight.
Well, there's two options too. There's there's the option of joining with financial assistance, and I was also asked to say if we couldn't do the financial assistance, would we be willing to, in theory, support a lawsuit where they look at other options? So that wouldn't cost the town any money. So there's two things that we could consider. And I agree with Bob. I think that there's another option that was presented by a group, I think the Committee of Save 81, and this was a majority of the ledge was in favor of that, and that included the same grid as they're proposing, only with a high-speed overpass, similar to what they have in Tampa, Florida, if you've ever been there. I go there quite a bit. I remember when they were building it. It's a nice-looking bridge, as bridges can be. Actually, this would be nicer because they were talking about lighting it, and it almost would be a showpiece for the city. And that actually, that the cost of that with the grid, I think, was less than what the cost would be if they do the grid and the enhancements to or improvements to 481. So the cost isn't an issue with the second option.
I think a cost is going to be associated with any option that we go with, even though we may not throw town money in the second option. But when the town applies for state grants and federal grants, guess what they're not going to be looking at? The ones that are suing them.
They can't do that.
Well, they say they can't, but we all know that they will.
No, I don't know that they
right?
will.
So yeah. I think this is a losing battle. First of all, you can't sue the federal government and win. So if you want to spend taxpayers' money, that's a waste of money.
Well, the second option is just philosophically
second option, yeah.
Well, not spending any money.
Right, and we can lose out on grant money, too. I don't want to take that chance. You're not going to be able to stop it, plain and simple.
We do have a copy of the final design report for that project.
Yeah, it's in.
Yeah, if anybody wants to take a look at it, because they did. There's multiple alternatives that are analyzed in that document. And I think everybody should probably take a look at that document and the detail that went into it before you make a decision.
This is today's paper. It's the Micron story. And then on the right, new group sues to stop 81 project. If we're going to be worried about being blackmailed or put on the bad boy list by the federal government, then I don't know what kind of country we live in, Jeff. I mean, sometimes you just got to take a stand and do what is right.
I asked plenty of attorneys, plenty of engineers. We don't have a chance. It's the worst thing we can do. That's just my opinion. I mean, I'm only one vote.
I'm not in favor of moving forward on that. I've attended the 81 meetings. I've attended the, you know, the workshops, looked at it. I'm not happy with the design. I don't like the way it travels, but at the same point in time, I think it's frivolous. You know, I don't see town of Salina being as impacted as directly as some of those people feel they will, with I-90 still running right through the heart of that area. I mean, regardless, people will still travel the thruway to get to the city of Syracuse. Whether they come through 690, and you know, for people up here, you'll still be able to drive 690. Yeah, you'll have to go to 481. I work for a trucking company. You know, fuel at 5+ a gallon. It's going to cost us more money. Some of the options weren't going to be viable for my trucking company anyway. We're hazardous materials. Tunnels don't work. They don't let you in a tunnel. So we'd still be going around. I don't know with the scenic bridge if hazardous materials would be allowed on that. So, you know, my company's looking at it as we're going to pay more to get around the city anyway, being on the north side of the city, going south and coming back. So, but, you know, I don't think town of Lysander has the skin in the game to jump into this lawsuit. I mean, if there was a lot more names and you understood who was behind this, I would have more understanding. I feel at the beginning it was, you know, the mall, and they built next to the highway for the car counts to be able to attract businesses, and we've watched those businesses come and just go over the last 20 years. So, you know, the car count that comes by, people will find other places to travel. They've torn highways and interstates down in the middle of cities before. People find other ways to get around. It doesn't become the impact that people perceive it to be. So I'm not for moving forward on that.
All right, that leaves me. So for starters, I'm not going to discount what the people in Salina think. I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking. So if they think it's going to be detrimental to their town, I'm going to have to go with them. I'm going to have to trust them on that. I'm not going to judge their decision. I understand not wanting to spend money on the lawsuit. I sort of understand a little fear of retribution, but I don't think it works that way. You fill out an application. If you meet the criteria, you meet the criteria, I believe. Am I wrong, Al? Or no? Or is there room for?
You know how that goes from a political standpoint. There's a lot of lobbying that goes on behind the scenes with the committees that score these grants. We see it all the time. I mean, we do. That's if you need support for something, you call your local representative and he makes a phone call for you to the people that are actually scoring the grants. So there is a political aspect to some of that. Now, can I say the phone call from the assemblyman or the congressman or the senator makes a difference to the people that are scoring? I don't know that. But I know that our representatives, if we ask them to support something, will call the people that are scoring it and say, hey, I support this project. Does that go into the consideration? I can't answer.
Probably.
I can't.
All right.
I think the important thing is, before anybody makes a decision, is to really review that design report.
Right.
And read the alternatives that were considered and the reasoning behind it. You don't have to read the whole thing. You don't have to read the traffic count right. piece
I
of
get it.
The actual piece that you got to read is like 50, 60 pages.
Right. I get it. If the lawsuit is contending that they didn't really take a look at the alternatives, if that's what the contention is,
that's why
I get it. But I would also never want to do anything that would damage town of Lysander.
I get it. But if the lawsuit truly is that they didn't look at the alternatives, well, there's a pretty big binder in there that says that they did.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
I mean,
the claims that they did. You could take a closer look. I'm not an attorney.
An attorney
could take a closer look and tell us whether or not they truly looked at all the alternatives. I would say I don't want to spend taxpayer dollars to prove a point. If there's another way to prove a point, I would rather prove a point that way. If there was a chance that we were going to lose money in the form of grants because we decided to make a stand, then I would have a concern with that. I don't know if that's the case either. I understand wanting to make a point. Sometimes, you know, when you talk about fish or cut bait, sometimes you got to cut bait. And if this is one of those situations where we have to say, look, we're not happy with it, but you're going to do it anyhow, then I don't want to risk future grant money, if that's what we would be doing. And I don't know, Tony, if that's what we'd be doing. I think you're right, Al. We'd have a better shot if we looked at the 50 or 60 pages of that document to see if there really is proof that they looked at all options and that this really was the best option. I don't know. I never had heard of a town hall meeting that they went to when they were planning all of this where the people sitting out in the audience said, yeah, let's do the grid. I had never heard of one that said that. So, it does sound almost like this was pushed down people's throats, but I don't know what the risk is of saying, yeah, let's put our names on a lawsuit either.
Well, I mean, we've been to public hearings before, all of us, and it's always the vocal minority that has the loudest voice. If the challenge truly is that they didn't look at alternatives, if that's what the lawsuit is based on, boy, that's a hard one to just knowing how the FHWA structures the design report analysis. That's a loser. I hate saying it that way, but if that's what the challenge actually is, I don't know if you got a leg to stand on.
Hold on.
So, how many other towns and villages are on this? Do you know?
Other than us, there would I think the most there would be is 8.
And there are 19 towns?
19 towns, yeah. We would be the 9th one.
Well, and how the about article I read, there was only 2 towns that signed on so far. 1, County Ledge, and Frank Fowler, who's behind this.
Yeah, there's more one. Than, there was more, well, I can't.
Of the Save 81.
Yeah, I can't say. The supervisors meeting that I went to, I think when we did a roll call, there was 8 or 9 that were considering it. So did they sign on yet? I can't say that.
Okay. Do you know about, you probably don't, but villages?
We were supposed to have a meeting and they canceled it, so I don't know what villages.
Okay.
Well.
I'm hesitant.
Well, tonight's the night, so if you're not going to vote for it, Pete, or support it, then it's done. It's over. If you are, then just say so, and we move on. But we can't debate this anymore because they have a deadline to move forward by next week. So, what's your call?
No, it's my call. It's not my call.
Yes, it is.
Well, why? Because I'm the middleman?
Yep. No, listen, everyone's got an opinion, and you know, I mean, if that's your opinion, that's your opinion. I mean,
right. I understand.
We don't always
agree
on everything.
Right, and I appreciate that. I don't want to risk Town of Lysander cash. I don't mind putting our name on a lawsuit if there's a majority of people, towns, out of that 19, if there's 17 or 18 towns.
There won't be.
I don't want to risk us in any way stepping on a beehive for something that we may or may not win.
Okay. So now, the next thing on the agenda, Hayes Road. Now, I know you wanted to put something in our computer system. We ran that by our tech person, and he said no.
Peter was really clear that we had to bring our own equipment.
Okay.
So I brought a monitor that I can flip and hopefully...
How long is it?
I have 12 PowerPoint slides, and I talk really fast.
Okay, but...
This is not...
Oh, just 12 slides.
This is just briefly some of the traffic pictures we have that you might not be aware of, so that you're fully informed about the issue. As the speed study goes forward and we await no parking signs, we would just like to show you these videos.
Well, we have the highway superintendent here right now. Where are we with the highway signs, Ken?
We are with this email to Marty Boss on August 15th. This says that despite my disagreement with paying for them, it says that I would agree to put them up. One of the guys said there's 18 signs, so post 20. Well, I had 2 more. But it says the county at one point in time put the signs there. So therefore, there was a study done, and they know best where to put those signs. I will commit to doing those signs once they're marked out and they pass the dig safe. That's how far I'm willing to go. Marty Ross is with the town of Onondaga, I have not heard back. So that's where we're at.
We would still have to have a public hearing on the signs, right?
Further than where we suggest.
We never had a public hearing yet.
Yeah, I mean, but we got to know where the signs are
going to
be. That's what we're waiting for.
When do you think you'll find out when those signs are going to be so we could have that public hearing?
Like I said, I can reach out to them tomorrow.
So you'll know by the next board meeting where they're going to be?
Yeah.
Because we have a group of people in the back that keep coming to the meetings and asking us where the signs are. And
I completely understand.
We don't put the signs up, so.
No, they need to be up. We just got to, yeah.
So that's where we're at. August 15th, I reached out and nothing yet, so I'll do it again tomorrow.
So I would imagine they will be here until the signs are up. So when do you think they'll be up, if you were to guess?
I have no idea. Once they mark the spot, it'll take 2 days to clear each one of those. The actual installation, I don't know, maybe a day.
Oh, you still have to have the public hearing part of it.
No, I realize that. Until we got to find out. Maybe I phrased that wrong.
By the end of the month.
Actually, we're looking for a timetable on when we're going to know where they're going to be, so we can have the public hearing and then get them on.
Good. Yeah.
Like I said, I reached out to Marty on the 15th of August and got nothing, but I will do that again. So from then to now, I didn't get any information on those signs, and hopefully...
Call them every day if you can, because we like to get this done.
Hopefully, I don't have that time, Jeff. And then from now till the signs up, I can't say. It's gonna be up to the county, whether they wanna do the marking and go get a site plan later, whatever it is.
Can Alicia place the calls? Can Alicia place those calls on behalf of you?
Oh, yeah.
You place the first call and then Alicia call?
We're not just the one call and leave it, but this just happened to be the last definitive email that I sent.
Okay.
I mean, so are we looking at putting stop signs on both sides of the road now? Or, I mean, we're gonna extend...
No parking.
No parking.
No parking. Yeah, go ahead, go ahead.
So, I think this will be helpful, that the video that Liz has put together, it's a PowerPoint, that we told you we were bringing tonight. What will be very helpful as far as where these parking signs need to go, at least on that end of the road, from 370 over to where all our homes are. I think it'll be very helpful because Ken can get a good visual on where the cars all park. So they're on both sides of the road from the Tiki Bar, right straight down all the way to the Elks Lodge. And everyone keeps talking about the signs that used to be there, but those are at the other end of Hayes Road. So we just need to be, hopefully everybody's on the same
page. Well, we're gonna put, we made a commitment to put in, there were other people other than you that had concerns about that road as well. So I realize that you have some issues, but the people at the other end of the road have issues as well. So we're gonna take care of them at the same time.
Yeah, we're actually.
Okay, so if we gotta put up
Yes.
20 signs, we're putting up 20 signs, because I realize that it's an issue, but we have to consider them as well.
Yeah.
You know, because I drove that road multiple times and I know they do have a legitimate complaint. The people that came in that were past the firehouse or down right around the firehouse.
The
yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so if this is about parking and things, maybe you could work something out with Ken to have him look at the video. There's no sense in us looking at them because we don't put the signs up. The highway superintendent.
Yeah, I think this looks at a traffic pattern as part of the speed study and our concerns. I mean, if you don't want to look at it, fine. I think we asked if you would see it, because we didn't just show up with the video and ask to play it. We asked if you would see it 2 weeks ago, and you said, sure, come to the work session. And so we're here.
Okay. How long is it?
The videos are short clips, right?
What? Okay, so...
I'll be done in 10 minutes.
Okay.
All right. Let's do it.
TV, huh?
They can't do it.
No, we can't.
Can we plug it to our new?
No.
They did not even want us to use the HDMI cable. They were concerned.
Well, because the HDMI goes into the computer.
Right. Plugs right into the TV.
What's that?
The HDMI plugs right into the TV.
That's all part of the computer system.
Is this on?
Well, I think it's that's what our tech, you know, every time you come up, you like to argue with us. That's what our expert who does the technology told us. So that's not me, right. And we go on what they're doing.
You want to display here?
Yep.
You are.
August 13th, 7:45.
Okay. So I will show you this daylight video. I'm going to go quick. I want to show you a couple still photos. You, Councilman Moore, you had asked about an overview of where we live and where the Tiki Bar is.
Okay.
So in terms of the four households that sat down for 2 hours with the town and the Tiki Bar, those are the red circles.
Okay.
I do feel this whole larger issue, the water amplifies the problem. Water, sound, it's, you know. And so that actually gives you an idea of the site as well.
Thank you.
And I would know, as the site approved as operated, residential was not checked. So in the controlled site review is not noted that this place was next to a residential area, commercial, and rural non-agricultural were the adjacent areas as marked on that review. All right, let me get you, there we are. So here is a common parking pattern that we're concerned. This is a traffic pattern. So the issue is that in a 55 mile an hour road, people back out onto the road. By the way, maybe it's not the way they want parking to work at the site, but they're not really lined parking, right? They're kind of people kind of line up and pull in, you know, just like we do in the snow when we can't see the lines anymore. You do the best you can. And so they pull, and so the results in a lot of backing out, and there's not one delineated driveway. There will be multiple driveways here. And then, this is even, you know, as Supervisor Wicks noted, you know, we need no parking signs because there's a lot of crazy driving that goes on. So, here we go, I'm gonna park. This is a video where you still have some daylight and you can kind of see the issue. There we go.
Did you show that video where people are backing out on the Hayes Road?
I'm doing that right now.
No video yet. This is the first video. They were all still shot. Kevin, click on that triangle.
I'm trying to. I can't even touch that.
No,
you see it on the screen?
No,
or is it
sorry. It was on
there.
Oh,
was it?
Yeah, it was there. Yeah, so it's there now. But
it's there now.
Trying to get motion.
Trying to get it to play, yeah.
Here we go.
Right.
So this is actually, I'll just show you a few minutes because this video goes on and on of the same picture, right? And I know you're pressed for time. But here's the issue is, you know, again, this is cited as a restaurant. There's 24 parking spaces allocated to the restaurant that is the Tiki Bar, and then there's 12 off-site. But that's clearly, this is a band night, and that's clearly not what's needed. There is an off-site, as you can see, there's heavy use of an off-site lot across the street. I would note here, there have been concerns from the Seneca River about emergency vehicles being able to get through here because the parking would block access in case of emergency. And this is a state lot, that's the DEC state launch lot. That shouldn't be used by the bar, but de facto it just is. And I realize that's not under your jurisdiction, but that's just what happens. All right, and then this is.
But no one's launching boats at night.
Well, people are getting their boats out. What people are leaving, and they can't get out because they've been locked in.
And they've been ticketed too, I heard.
There was one ticketing event that issued multiple tickets. Yeah. One night they finally came to ticket. Yeah. It's pitch black. It's a dark road. My kids had a telescope when they were younger. There was minimal light pollution. It was a wonderful area to live for it. But it's dark. And what happens is you see in this thing, there are multiple driveways on both sides where people are getting out and exiting. And there are pedestrians you can kind of see in the headlights coming. So you have like at least two outlets from the Tiki Bar area itself, two outlets from the state lot on one side of the road. And then across the way, there's essentially two exits that come out of that external parking lot that is leased for the overflow parking.
It kind of looks like the state fairgrounds.
It does. It is. And as I said, people. And then people are walking back to their cars across the street and things like that. And I, you know, it's never been a particularly well-lit area at night and as well. But you can.
It's 55.
And that's, you know, right. And I don't know that, I'm not saying people are going 45 right now as they pull out, or 55, but it is a 55 mile an hour road.
The traffic study will take 2 years.
That's right. And the traffic study takes 2 years, and Ms. Natalie Vetter told me they only look at traffic from 7 to 3. The good news is she said she would accept these from me. So she would accept documentation from me.
Yeah, there's no way that should be 55. That's just my opinion.
You know, it was a default. Oh. It's the default of Onondaga County roads.
Especially going around the corner there in the back of the east.
Sure. So that was what we had asked to show you tonight. This goes on and on, but it's pretty much the same thing.
Now, I saw a discussion about the planning board review with it being NRBD. Where does that fall under R, or does the planning board have to?
The planning board said that we need to talk to you, but Tony, that maybe Tony was kind of we're just told in an email that we had to come back to you guys.
I mean,
by the planning board.
They indicated the planning board did not feel that
this was their right.
But NRBD is under there. That's who reviews the NRBD district. I mean, in 2018 or 19, the planning board went through the steps. And I read the minutes, and I feel they didn't address a couple of things.
But here's the question on that. If there's a operating business in a location and they got and it was under, they had certain criteria when they established that business, and you pass a law to change that zoning, are they grandfathered then?
Did the law, was the law changed?
It was limited business, which is actually worse. They have less.
But what I'm saying is if there's a designation that the building, that the business was under, if you change the law, if businesses are already in there, then they get grandfathered in. What it does, it prevents anybody else from moving in, moving forward. But there's no, they're called ex post facto laws. You can't make a law and apply it to somebody that's already been.
They were never approved as a bar.
This was a limited business.
Right, so they're not grandfathered in because they didn't
operate. I know what you're saying, and I'm not... I know what you're saying, and I'm not an attorney. That's why we have an attorney.
I don't want to bait and switch with you. I asked for the traffic video.
Yeah.
I'm just asking, we don't have NRBD. We didn't have the zoning changed. Those rules between the time they came in front of the planning board. I mean, they went down the NRBD plan. I saw where they skipped over a couple of things.
So here's the how are you asking me this, Kevin?
Yeah, because you were the engineer for planning.
So when we look at these, we look at what is shown on the site plan. He showed a stage. He did not show exterior speakers. He did not say he wanted exterior. My understanding is that previously he just had small acoustics acts there that were, I don't know if they're amplified or not even, but he had small acoustic acts that weren't loud. Apparently that has changed. But in my opinion, if he wants to have exterior speakers, he should have to come back in front of the planning board and let the planning board debate that. Or that hasn't happened.
Okay, so his business changed. Great for him, it expanded. Mm-hmm. But what can the town do is saying, hey, you don't fall under this anymore. You need to get a variance. You need to come back through the process. You've changed what you told us 3 years ago. You're not that anymore.
I think that becomes a code enforcement issue, Kevin.
Okay.
That's the way I see it, is it becomes a code enforcement issue because you have the code, the town code, clearly states that if you want to have exterior speakers, you have to get approval from the planning board.
And I did run that by Tim because, you know, we talked about the exterior speakers. So I brought Tim in and I said, what's the deal with, are there exterior speakers there? He said, no. Bands bring them in, which don't fall under, according to Tim now.
According to Tim,
I asked him this question. Hold on now. All right, you got to maintain some little order here. So I did ask him about the speakers, and he said that according to our code, they would have to be built in or attached. And I'm paraphrasing because it was a conversation. To the building, which they are not. When the bands come in, they bring in their speakers. According to Tim, and I'll have to bring him here, he's saying that doesn't fall under our code for exterior speakers in the plant. That's what he said.
That's from an engineering standpoint. I don't have anything to weigh in on that.
Yeah.
I think that becomes a legal question. All I can say is how the planning board reviews it when the review was presented.
The stage was permitted 3 years after it was built, per town records.
Correct. Okay.
But
we're talking about the speakers.
That's where the speakers go.
But they're not. According to our codes enforcement officer, who's more well versed in this than me, he said that doesn't fall into our code because I asked him that, and he said that, according to him, if he was to enforce it, they'd have to be like fixed, attached to a building or whatever. And they are not. The bands bring in the...
They're not supposed to have anything in our...
Right. But what's the intent of the law? The intent intent is we don't want exterior speakers.
I do not know what the intent of the law was, because I wasn't around, and I don't know that we have any, I doubt if they put any notes in when they did the law to say what the intent of the law is. If you have other state laws, you can look at the bills when they pass laws, and they will outline what the intent of the law is, but I don't think that they did that.
I think Gil is right, though. He's right on point with what he said. You know, this wasn't a, you know, it was a little acoustic band. That's what was there, and that was acceptable to everyone in this neighborhood. You know, we don't just represent the six or eight of us or 10 of us that come to meetings. We represent a lot of other households. We just speak for them. We have names. We have, you know, where people have signed. But I think this speaks to what we're trying to resolve this. Little acoustic bands are wonderful. Even three-piece bands are wonderful. You just can't have speakers blaring in a neighborhood.
Nobody wants to resolve this more than me. I guarantee you that. Nobody. I have tried. Listen. Nobody wants to resolve it more than me. I guarantee you that. But I'm not here to pick sides. You know, whether I agree with you, whether I empathize with, and I do, you know, I understand your position, and I do empathize with your position, but I do not, what I have to do and what we have to do as a board is find, we can't pick sides, so we have to have some legal reason why we do what we do. And right now, I don't see that we have it. That's all.
Did code enforcement say that this is the tradition? Because the actual neighborhood residential business director says, exterior noise and odors shall be minimized. Exterior speakers shall not be permitted or used without specific approval of the planner.
Any exterior.
See, these are things that I think you need to have, make a meeting with Mr. Woolsey.
Right.
Have a meeting with him. If we need our attorney there to interpret some of the law, I'll be happy to do that. We met with you before, but that's really where it's at right now. It's a legal question, it's a code question that I'm not well versed enough in those two areas. You ask me criminal law, I'll help you out. You know, I'm pretty good with that. With the codes and things, I'm not that well versed, so I have to defer to our codes enforcement officer, who's trained in that, and our attorney. So,
could I make a suggestion?
I have a suggestion too.
Tim Prateski, he should be consulted.
That's what I was going to suggest. It seems to me that this is not exactly a town board issue unless it's clear that there's a violation of a code in which our code enforcement officer can deal with it. As much as I respect, and I really do, Tim Woolsey, he's not an attorney. And I wonder if this town board can politely, through protocol, ask the planning board to review this situation from the from the non-residential business district perspective.
Tim
can't go back to town. And
Tim protection.
See, now here you got two attorneys that are moving back.
What I'm talking about is
get them both in the room.
We heard that Tim Woolsey said these are not fixed speakers, so therefore they don't apply. I don't buy that. And I would like an attorney like Tim Prateski to review that with our planning board to say this is as clear as anything can be. These speakers that bands bring in are perfectly legal or they're not.
That's a good... Go ahead.
I'd like to add to that as well. If, in fact, there is some kind of a loophole as far as whether these are exterior speakers permanently mounted or not. If there's a loophole, we should also ask our planning board to close up that loophole.
Exactly.
So that this issue doesn't arise.
The
again.
Planning board, so you guys got to write the law. I mean, the planning board, I'm sure, will support you. Yeah.
Why? I think what Bob suggested was...
Come on, for a second, I just want to talk to you about something really quick.
Okay.
I want to go into executive session.
Okay.
Sure.
Go ahead.
I agree with you, Bob. I'd like to have Tim and Tony together in the room together with you guys. So that way there's no finger pointing, hash it out.
I would acknowledge they spent 2 hours with us in July.
Both of them?
Yeah. And Supervisor Wick.
No, Tim Prateski, the attorney.
Tim, the planning board attorney.
And the
planning board attorney
the code enforcement. We didn't mind coming back because we don't like the answer. We didn't have, they said, well, the controlled site review, I'm like, what the, what? And so then they gave it to us. We didn't have the controlled site review. We didn't have the limited business, you know, code because it's no longer online. So that first meeting, we were given that, we didn't have it. And then I read it and I thought, where is this stopped?
Well, now that you have it, get the planning board attorney, our attorney, code enforcement officer.
And I know they gave us time already, they're like, you again. But, I mean, it's with a larger...
You're entitled to this.
And we like you, you know, yeah, you're entitled to this, as Bob said, and I like you guys coming here as well, too, so keep coming.
We're running short on time, so how do we go about getting on this?
We already requested it, and they told us they don't want it.
Karen Rice said, no, sorry.
I'm sure supervisor Rice will...
I have no idea about the planning board, that's a different board.
I'm sure he'll facilitate everybody's schedules.
Like, how long do we wait? Because we've started this...
I'm sure it'll be within the next...
I would call him...
I'm pretty sure he wants to try to...
I would call him tomorrow or Monday to get it, you know, I'd like to get things resolved and moved on, you know, so I know you guys been going, coming here a while, but I would call him probably Monday and say, let's get this scheduled.
And that would be with the planning, you're saying with the planning...
A private session with a planning board, not coming here in front of a board, just a private session with Tony, the planning board attorney, the code enforcement officer. Now he's going on vacation, he actually went on vacation
here this week.
So he's gone for 10 days. I just remember that.
It's probably within 26.
Yeah.
26 is his first day in the office, I think.
Yeah, so he won't be back until the 26th. But at least you can have that conversation with the planning board attorney and so.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. Tim's told you how he interprets the code, so it's probably up to the attorneys to decide.
Let them hash it out. He's not an attorney, but the attorneys.
Okay, well, we got Mr. Fava here. I want to give him his opportunity to speak. So, did you come to a resolution, I hope?
Yeah, Monday they're going to call you.
You're going to call me on Monday?
And then you're going
to
get
set up the attorneys.
You'll set up and meet them. I forgot Tim's on vacation.
The attorneys with Tim Woolsey, get everybody in the same room.
Yeah, that's right.
Tim's on vacation. Tuesday.
So,
I don't get that day.
That's fine. Give me a call Tuesday. And I'll facilitate getting people together. Okay? You're welcome. All right, we good?
Thank you, guys.
Things are starting to work out.
Jim, we good?
No.
Okay. Mr. Fava, you want to come up?
Hi, my name is Frank Fava, and I represent the group that wants to build the Drake's Landing apartment complex on Drake's Landing. And currently, we own the Center Point project on Hillview Lane, Center Point Drive. And we've been there 22, 23 years now. And when we first bought that project, it was just obviously just raw land. And today, the project puts in about $225 a year into the tax base. And then 5 years ago, we built a brand new three-story building, a prototype for ourselves. And the town was very gracious. CETA, they helped us with a pilot program where, you know, we started out at a lower level. And we had a period of 10 years. We're in the fifth year now of that 10-year pilot. So it gives us 10 years to get the rents up to the point where it comes with full taxes. Now, the Drake's Landing project pays about $11,000 a year, which we're now paying. And prior to that, it was owned by the government, and it was an ammunition dump, like most of it was. And our project's going to spend about $30 million in that development. And what we're asking for is another pilot program so we can get the opportunity to get the project up and running and give us some time to build up to the point where it can be fully taxed. And the taxes on that project would probably be around $300,000, $310,000. So, I think they're good projects. We've done very well in the town here. We built a very good project. People are very happy there. We've been full for most of the time, and we're just looking for another opportunity to do this in the town. But it's really big help for us to have some breathing room to be able to have some time to get the rents up to the point where we can.
So Frank, I'm not understanding this. You've got approval to build the apartments?
Yes.
So we don't give out pilot agreements. The county does that.
I think what Mr. Fowler needs from the town board, as far as the IDA is concerned, is a letter of support that the town board would support his application for the pilot.
Have we done that before?
We've been asked to do it before. We've refused on some different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they always ask the town and the school district.
I wish we had that latitude to say yay or nay to these things, but it's been
They can ignore us.
Yeah, exactly.
But they always ask for a pilot.
I'm just curious, Frank, with Micron coming on the scene, why would you need a pilot?
Well, realistically, we started this 5 years ago. And we're just dealing with what the market is for us now. If it wasn't for COVID, we would have started this hopefully already. It's nice that they're coming, but by the time they get up and running and start to put people working, chances are we'll be up and running by then. As far as the pilot program goes, it just gives us time. Right now it pays $11,000 a year. We're going to really raise that up. And quite honestly, the property's been there for years. Commercial out of it, nobody wanted to do anything with that. And as far as the residential, the people that residential people owned it beforehand, they didn't want to do anything with it. And I think it's an opportunity for us to get in and try to build another development here that, as time goes on, they're market rate units. Right now we've got about 50% of our tenants are seniors. So, it's a good project, it makes sense, but it's just sometimes, like what they did the last time, the town gave us, or OCDA gave us a pilot program 5 years ago, and that's been very helpful to us. It's just deferring something that we're having.
So how many years?
It was 10.
Is that what you're looking for,
yes.
10? A 10-year pilot? And this is because you have so much money up front that going in, and you have no way to recoup that until such time as 10 years goes.
You just can't. We know where the top end is on the rents right now. But
what's top end on the rents right now?
The one bedrooms are going to start around 1,200, 1,250, and the three bedrooms will be around 2,100, 2,000, depending upon the square footage. That's the top end now. Our new building is very close to that now, it just takes time to get there.
Do you need a pilot to get a loan to build this project? Can you just borrow this money without a pilot?
The numbers have to work. Okay.
Yeah.
So, with coming out of the chute and having to pay that kind of taxes right off the bat, it's going to be in a position where it's going to make it very difficult to make the numbers work.
So when you talk about a 10-year pilot, this isn't a situation where 10 years later you pay $300,000 in taxes. It's graduating.
It's graduated.
Right.
It's graduated.
So go ahead.
And it's like 10, 20, 30%, as they go on, it raises it every year. And I don't believe right now, like I say, we're paying the taxes there now, it's $11,000. Even when we start from day one, I believe the taxes are going to be more than that. So it's not going to be a situation where, anybody's going to go backwards as far as receiving the tax money.
So what's your anticipated revenue going to be yearly without the pilot program? Or just what's your revenue going to be based upon all the units fully occupied?
I didn't really have to look at the P&L. You're asking me the gross revenue?
Yeah, what's your revenue going to be?
Probably about $40,000 a month, 40, somewhere in that vicinity.
How many units?
162.
162 units at
1,200.
1,200, that's a lot more than that.
1,200 a piece.
Well, let me just look.
While you're looking for that, what are the, on a $30 million project, Al, maybe you can help me out with this, what would the, what kind of permitting fees would there be on a project like that? Just a, any kind of an estimate?
I don't know, I'll stop my head. Yeah, I can't answer that.
Well, I mean, the fees we paid before were, you know, whatever the fees, you know, for the building permits and mm-hmm. all those types of things, that.
They're substantial.
That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah, they're substantial. They're at a project like that, they'd be up there.
I would imagine.
In the tens of thousands.
When do you go in front of Oceida?
Later on this month. I mean,
so you're looking for something now. We don't have time at the next meeting.
You know, they you know, certain other areas they said they're okay with, but they want to have the okay from the town to be able to proceed with it. So that's. Right.
Yeah, I mean, when they built Center Point years ago, this is just my personal opinion, you know, the industrial development agencies for industry, I don't really consider homes or apartments industry, so, in my feeling, so I'm not in favor of supporting it, but I'm one vote.
I'm not in favor of supporting it.
Well,
to make a couple million dollars a year, $1 million a month at least, my calculation.
We have one more meeting this month, right? On I think it's the 20th, right?
20th.
If we take some time to discuss it later, and you know, and maybe you could have other conversations. Will that give you enough time if we made a decision by the 20th?
Sure.
Okay. Would you mind doing that? That way, because you know, we cut you a little short. I want to make sure you have enough time. And you know, to make a decision with this amount of information, because you gave me a lot more information, you know, and I think the information you had, if you shared it with the other board members at different times, that you know, I'm not saying it's going to change their decision or anything, but certainly I think that to give you that opportunity, they should at least have the information that you gave me.
Okay, that would be great.
Okay.
Now, do you go in front of the school district too, or no? Just the.
Well, I wanted to come here first.
Okay.
And then talk with the school district.
Sure. Thank you.
So I'll make sure that you know, we can. You have my phone number, right?
Yes.
I want to make sure. Just if you text me your number, and I'll make sure everybody has that, and then we'll facilitate it that way. Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Mr. Favre.
Thank you.
Okay, it's 7:00, a little after 7, so we'll close the work session and we'll call a meeting to order. Start with a pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hopefully everybody had a chance to review the minutes. If everybody has, can I get a motion to adopt the minutes as distributed?
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. Citizens' comments. Are there any citizens that would like to speak this evening on town business? No? Okay. We'll move on. Town board comments. We'll start with you, Mr. Rode, tonight.
Yesterday, Councilor Gerasi, Koudarakis, and Supervisor Wicks, you know, had the meeting to accept the 2023 budget. Thank you for doing that. Can't wait to get into this next week. We've got some discussions to have, but you know, all in all, I think Supervisor Wicks has tried to present a very conscientious and conservative budget, and I think that's good, but I, you know, there are some things that we can get into the weeds on as we go over the next 2 weeks, so don't be afraid to come to the budget work sessions or post it on the website and attend. Thank you. That's all.
I'll piggyback off what Kevin said. I think Mr. Wicks did a great job putting together the budget so far, so look forward to it.
Okay.
Thank you. Yep.
As I often do, I'll speak for Canton Woods, that I serve on the board there, that wonderful senior facility serving the residents of Van Buren, Baldwinsville, and the town of Lysander. This particular item, I'll read it real quick and then I'll give it to Dina to post. It says, please help. The Baldwinsville Express Senior Transportation Program desperately needs drivers. These are the people that if you can't drive or you're unable to get to the doctors or the dentist or something like that, you can call these folks up and for free they will find volunteers to drive you to wherever you're going and coming back. It's a wonderful program. We've participated in it, and these are just people like people in this room that are using their own cars. I don't think people worry about insurance or, you know, you're going to spend your own money on gas, but it's pretty much from here to some local doctor's office. So the number is 315-638-4536, but consider that. You don't have to sign up and do it every day. It's like maybe you do it once a month and you're going to help some older person or some person that is unable to drive to get to their doctor. So, Dina, I'll give this to you.
Okay.
That's all I had. Thank you.
Mr. Moore?
Yeah, I'm sure Kevin will get into this a little bit. It's October, of course. I always look forward to the window painting. I like to see the kids out there. I think it's such a great Baldwinsville tradition. So, what's that?
Yeah,
there you go. I hope a lot of people sign up. A lot of kids are out there painting windows. Also, I look very forward. I just took a brief glance at the budget. I like the numbers that I'm seeing as far as tax rates. So I'm very excited to go through this whole thing. I know it sounds kind of nerdy, probably, to want to go through this document full of numbers, but I like it and I look forward to it. Thank you for coming in, everyone who's here, and thank you very much for watching on PAC 98. I'm good.
Okay. So speaking of the budget, it's going to be put on our website. Did Ms. Falcone, did you put that on already?
I'm checking to see if I received it.
Okay. If you hadn't, don't put it on because there were some things that we want to change in that. Okay, that was point.
I did get it at 5:30.
Okay, so don't put it on until we have a discussion. There's some changes. So, in the budget has a different format, and you know, I'd love to take credit for that budget, and I did have a lot to do with it. But I got to say, our new comptroller was just unbelievably good when it came to doing the budget. She was very, very. She just had a lot of knowledge on how to put the budget together. So when you look at the budget, you're going to see a different format. One of the things that Mr. Kudarauskas and Mr. Gerasi pointed out, it looks like, if you look at it quickly, it could look like that I gave myself the $18,000 raise because it says town supervisor $70,000. Well, that's only because and that's what we're going to change. It's going to be town supervisors program. So if you look at the budget, you look in the end, you'll see a roster under administration where under town supervisors programs, you'll see that my salary stayed the same. It didn't increase. But you'll see the other salaries of the people that are Mrs. Mott. She's in there as well. So that's all part of that $70,000. So when you look through that at first glance, and both Mr. Kudarauskas and Gerasi pointed that out, it looks like that I had a raise. So it some of the numbers in there are going to look a little different from you, but if you look through it, and in the back of the program, you will see a roster, and that's where there's a breakdown of that $70,000. But the reason behind that is that these are because they changed the accounting principles, state accounting principles, we're trying to get our format of everything we do here in a format that when we put new accounting software together, we'll be able to extrapolate any information we want at any time. And right now, it's very difficult to do that because some of the numbers were inconsistent. So for instance, if you had personnel salary, or no, I won't use personnel, but supplies. So if Mrs. Golden had supplies, it could be A102, and then Ms. Falcone had supplies, could be A103. I don't know how that happened, but you know, each department supplies would be under a different number. Well, it's very, very, very difficult, if in fact you can even do it without hand going through the information to pull that information out. If one of the other board members wanted to know, hey, how much did we spend on supplies? It's total supplies, it'd be very, very difficult to do. And then if you try to break it down by department, it would be difficult again. So this, the way the format that it's in, will, moving forward, once you get used to reading the information, it'll be, there's a lot more information in there. And once you get used to reading it, it will be a lot clearer. But you know, I thank the two counselors for pointing some of those things out, so that when we title these things, it's not, the numbers are going to stay the same, but the titles will be different. So town supervisor, it won't be town supervisor, it'll be town supervisor's program. So that breaks it down a little bit different, so it makes it a little bit more clear, hopefully. But there is a lot of information in there when you go through. So for the people that do look at it, just take your time. Micron coming in, as Mr. Gerasi said earlier, it's going to bring in, they're estimating 100,000 people. They're looking at 9,000 jobs just out of Micron, with another 40,000 jobs with ancillary businesses that provide things to Micron. Well, Micron, their salaries are going to average about $109,000 a year. If you look at 9,000 times $109,000 a year, you're looking at $1 billion in salary, approximately $1 billion in salary alone just from Micron. So, and you add the other $40,000 or 40,000 jobs, it's going to substantially change the complexion of Onondaga County. I think that it's going to be great for our community. It's going to bring in a lot of outside businesses. It's going to bring in things that this community doesn't have, but I think are going to like to have. And also, it'll allow an avenue for our kids that are going to engineering school, if they go to RIT, if they go to SU, if they go to Cornell, and where are they going now? Well, everybody. And my son had a number of friends that went to RIT. Not one of them live in this community. This will offer an opportunity for those kids to stay in our community and make the type of living that they want to make, and they can make going to other cities throughout the United States. So I think it's just a fantastic opportunity for us, and I look forward to it moving forward. That's all I have. Department head reports. Mr. Rivazigno. Nothing. Mr. Merrill.
You
do have some. There you go.
So, first, well, let's do this first. So, we have registration for Arts and Crafts Club. This is session two. So, we've created this program kind of to be an ongoing thing. With really no end in sight, but we run them in three-week sessions. So we got registration is ongoing right now for session two. And
I will sign up Mr. Kudaraskis for that, because he was telling me earlier that.
I did the window painting cleaning.
You like the arts and crafts. He wants to make a nice little flower.
So he can. So week one, he can make himself an oriental crown. Or some paper airplanes.
That might be a little bit too highbrow for him. So can we tone it down?
So the origami crown, the kids are going to do origami in paper airplanes. The crown was just an example that David was playing around with stuff this week. Week two, just in time for Halloween, the kids are going to be making these mason jar pumpkin lanterns. And then week three, which I don't have any props here for that, and it's kind of hard to explain, but it's called galaxy painting. It's done on poster boards or foam boards with spray paint. It's pretty neat, actually. That's something that my daughter's done it. She's actually going to need that class. So registration is ongoing for that. The flyer and registration form are on our webpage and on Facebook. We have a board game club ongoing for kids. It's Saturdays at 11 right here. So that doesn't cost anything. It's free to the kids. They just show up. They can bring their own games.
Is that the chess club too?
They can play chess. It's, we started with chess club over the summer, and then it became board game club. So
that's pretty well attended, right?
The chess club. The board game club kind of ebbs and flows. So, it's a good program. We have registration is still ongoing for Halloween window painting. We had a nice piece in the Messenger yesterday done by Ashley Casey. So we got some nice press on that. So registration, last I checked with David, we are up to about 140 people. And it's not just kids. Their parents, their grandparents can all register. So we are up to 140 registered. Our goal is 200 at a max. We had about 175, I think it was, last year. So that's, we'd like to at least get to that, if not 200. So that's Halloween window painting. That's Saturday the 22nd. And then following window painting on the same day, we teamed up with Orange and Olive Design, Jeff's former neighbor. And she's got an event that she's put together called Spooky Hollow Festival. And she's got a haunted house that her family puts together. They're gonna turn the Rotary Pavilion into a haunted house. And she's got some vendors, and she's working on some food trucks come in and do a little Halloween festival that evening. So people can go from window painting right to Spooky Hollow Fest at Lysander Park. So, and then we have, just let you guys know, we have permit to go. We're gonna add the boulders similar to what's along Henkel Boulevard. We're going to, once our parking lot is done, we're gonna line that parking area along Smoky Hollow so that cars can't drive straight out. They're forced to use the driveway in and out of the parking lot. So we'll be doing that.
And cars can't drive in either over the road.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Because right now, the way it's set up, it's a free-for-all. Pull into that parking area, pull out of that parking area, and not have to use the driveway. So
maybe we can bring some of those extra boulders down to Hayes Road. Just a joke.
Another discussion.
Where am I going to put it?
Look at it. We got some reaction out there.
They got it.
Okay. While I'm thinking about it, while you're talking about it, the Ghost Walk, and there was a Women's Night Out, Blue Night Out or something. They aren't doing that, and some of the people that were involved in that are looking for us to take that over, and that's a big deal.
That's huge.
Yeah, the Ghost Walk. So just remind, I've been meaning to talk to you about it, but we've been doing the budget, so I'll put you in touch with them.
We can talk about that, I can reach out to them.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
Okay. My question to the board is, well, first of all, being the town highway superintendent, I would assume that those budgets have line items to do with the highway.
You didn't. Correct. She didn't give your
today.
Yeah.
But when I went into work this morning, the employees already knew it was on there. But that's not my comment.
Well, I don't know how they. I mean, there's only six of those out. So if they were to get it, they would have had to get it from one of the six people that had the thing. And I can tell you they didn't get it from me.
Very true, Bob.
Yeah, they didn't get it from me.
The other question is, the portion of my budget that's in there is, which I saw through the text or email, whatever it was significantly lower than my original number. My question is, was that number reached by a group discussion between the board?
No. I'm the financial officer for the town. So when I put the when the budget is put together, the tentative budget is put together with me and the department heads. Me, the comptroller, and the department heads. Now, on numerous occasions, in fact, I've been talking to you since January, since you've been elected, I said, look, you know, budgets are difficult, and, you know, I'd be willing to help you, you know, put it together. And then when it got to be budget time, when you got your sheets, I asked you if you were going to come over and we were going to discuss that budget, if there had to be any modifications in it. You said that you would. Next thing I know, you're sending out a budget to your proposed budget to the town board. So the town board does not put the tentative budget together. I do.
Okay.
And then we have modifications to be made. But while you bring it up, your initial budget had a 70% increase over what it was last year.
Okay.
The just in your budget alone, it would have been a $200 increase for a household of $250,000. They'd be paying an additional, whatever they paid last year, they'd be paying an additional $200 a year. If it's a $500,000 house, which we have plenty of those around, they'd be paying an additional $400 a year. Your budget would have been over $4.5 million. Your budget was had an increase of $1.4 million over what you got last year, and what you got last year was the highest budget that a highway superintendent has ever gotten. And you're proposing a 70% increase during a time when the gas has gone up, people going to the grocery store, a family of four are spending almost $500 more, they're paying $5 more for gas, or over $5 for gas, people are getting laid off. And an economist on TV said, governments during these times, during high inflation at 18%, government has to pull back a little bit and not overtax the citizens. Now, if you look at your budget, even with that, your budget is $250,000 over what it was last year, and you had the highest budget ever last year. Now, how did we do that? Because we've been saving a fund balance. I've been working since I've been in here and the board to increase those fund balances, because I do pay attention to the to where we're going with the economy.
$255,000, is that what you said?
I said 250. Increase.
Added increase.
Increase. Well, let me finish though. Let me finish my thought here.
Okay.
I knew we were going to be in this situation, because all you had to do when I pay attention to the economy, and I watch the business channels all the time. So we had a substantial fund balance, both the general fund and the highway fund. So last year we used $230,000 out of that fund balance for the highway to get you to the money that we're at. This year we used $400,000 out of that highway budget. And now, instead of having a $200-plus dollar increase for people that pay the highway tax, so a household of $250,000 this year is going to get a $5 increase. We have to be frugal.
Well, I believe most of it was at 40%. The reason why I did the budget myself...
No, we did the numbers. No, it's not 40%.
The reason I did it myself is because I wanted to. On the challenge of doing it properly. I looked into every price on that. I looked into everything. I had 3.8, and I expected the board to not take it. But what I did not expect is the board to totally not acknowledge that they even got it.
That's not how it works. I put together...
And that's just being polite, Bob.
No, I put together, but by law, I'm the one responsible, not the board, to put the tentative budget together. By law, I'm in charge of that. Okay?
I talked to somebody today that told me different, but I will.
I don't know who you talked to. They gave you bad information, because it's all you have to do is look at town law. I'm the chief financial officer. I'm the one who puts together the tentative budget. Then we go, once you get the tentative budget, we go to, and we have the town board gets a chance to look at it, and then they can make modifications if they like. If a majority of the board decides that they want to make modifications to it, then it becomes the preliminary budget. Then later we vote on it and it's the adopted budget. That's how it goes. But the initial one, I'm the budget officer for the town. Every supervisor in the state is the budget officer. We're the ones that put that tentative budget together. And to your point, you wanted to do it on your own? That's fine. Then if you didn't want to talk about it, then I made modifications in that budget where I thought it was reasonable. And like I said, you still got $250,000 more than you got last year, not $1.4 million.
And as I had stated, we have a budget work session for the highway, and we can go over, you know, you're there, we're going to go over the numbers. You can present what you feel you need, we can discuss it, and, you know, at the end, you present your budget, you tell us the numbers you want. Supervisor Wicks came up with the numbers for his preliminary budget, and we have a discussion. And that's how the process plays out. But, I mean, I did acknowledge that I received your budget. And I think it's a high budget. And
it is high.
You know, the reality in Lysander is, you know, we can tout lowest tax rate all we want. We have to provide services, and our town is growing. And with Mike Gron being 7 miles away in the next 10 years, if that comes, I watched, you know, 20 years ago how great Destiny was going to be. And here we are now. So, you know, the hopes and dreams, thank you to the federal government, because without the federal government and the CHIPS Act, Micron wouldn't even be a dream. It'd just be, still be a dream. So, you know, I can't wait to see what actually happens at White Pines. But, you know, we have to admit, we've grown our town over 30 or 40 years and kept relatively the same amount of people working in the highway department. Thank you for your budget, and I look forward to working it out at the work sessions.
Well, I guess I'll just go on to close it up. And thank the people for being patient on Eden and Exeter. We're very close to final grade of the stone, which means that it will be blacktopped shortly, as soon as we can get a contractor in to take care of that. I just want to acknowledge the guys for how many hours they're putting in, and the speed at which we're accomplishing the project is pretty good. There's been a lot of cooperation with Tiroli, our guys, and hopefully that'll be wrapped up, and then that'll close up Indian Springs for 10 or so years. That'll have Mott and all that neighborhood will be finished. So please be patient a little bit longer. Thank you for letting us make noise and dirt, and we'll put an end to it soon.
Ken, if I could just say something to you, I want you to approach the budget session positively. That's how I'm going to go into it. I think and I don't want to speak for Supervisor Wicks, but it's a protocol issue. You know, when I was a department head in the county, if I ever dared to submit my budget directly to the county legislature, that would have been the last day I would have been on the job. Now, respecting the fact that you're an independently elected department head, that maybe is different there, but I can assure you that I will pay attention to everything you have to say and come prepared to say, guys, the budget that's in front of you is not going to work, and here's why. Come to us very positively with that approach. I'm not saying you're going to get anything you want, but come with that attitude, okay?
Yes.
We didn't have a chance to talk about the bulk storage.
You want to do it with the resolution? You want to do it now?
Is there a resolution on here for it?
But
I didn't. Yeah, you know, in
it's
the
last
back.
One.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, but yeah, talk about it now. While we get some time.
So we have a petroleum bulk storage tank at the highway garage. Our permit has expired. We've been granted a grace period to the end of the year to get the tank closed. I'm presenting you with a proposal from CHA tonight to do the engineering services portion of that project. The estimated total cost is $31,700. That's very, very conservative. I do not anticipate we'll hit that. We'll come in someplace around 25 realistically, but that's what we have with contingencies in there. Trying to keep costs as low as we can. Samantha Miller, who will be the PM for this project, already spoke with the DEC about it, and due to the groundwater table, the DEC has agreed that we don't have to get a sample from under the tank analyzed, so there's a pretty good savings in that already. So,
could I ask a question? Just to refresh everybody's memory on this, I mean, we're doing this because we're buying fuel from the school, from correct. Using the school. Yep. And my only concern there, maybe it's not even a concern, it's just we're putting all of our eggs in one basket and assuming that the school, being able to get, you know, fuel from the school system is always going to be there, probably will be. But if, is this petroleum tank in any way compromised right now? I mean, in the sense that it, is it smart to get rid of it, is what I'm saying?
So the liability and the record-keeping piece of it, we need to do a significant upgrade to the pump and the software system that's there. Basically, we're looking to get into compliance from a software standpoint and a pump standpoint. We need to spend $15,000 to $20,000. And then you still have the environmental liability that goes with that underground petroleum
annual
storage tank.
Annual permit fees, right?
And annual permit fees.
What do they go for about?
It's $500 a year.
But the computer system, too.
That's what the software okay. and pump. We're looking at a significant cost to upgrade it to bring it into compliance from the record-keeping standpoint that the DEC currently has. Our current system is no longer supported. It actually won't run on anything newer than Windows 7. We don't want to have a Windows 7 machine that's not supported by Microsoft on our network. So we're kind of at we're in a situation where we either have to spend a significant sum of money to upgrade a system that still leaves us with a significant liability. I think our PBS insurance it's like
it keeps going up.
It's like $1,800 a year that we're paying now plus the permit
keeps
fee.
Going up. Right.
This is the prudent thing to do. The school bus garage has an emergency generator, so we'll be able to get fuel even if we, power's out, which is important for Ken's guys. You know, we get an ice storm and the power goes out everywhere. Ken's guys are still going to be able to get fuel and get the roads clear.
And I'm only asking the questions because I just want to be sure we're doing the right thing. Ken, from your perspective, is the school program working?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We actually got a better deal than we did from last year.
Significantly better.
Quite a bit. So
when you need fuel, you can get it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to hear. Thanks.
Anything else, Al?
I have nothing else to say.
Stolen.
Good evening. In your mailboxes, you should have gotten a copy of the August to September assessor's report. There are no new Supreme Court filings or certiorari cases for 2022. The town has one case pending, which is the Timberbanks Apartments. It includes multiple parcels, but it's one case. The town received 7 small claim filings for 2022, and the hearings were held in August and September. All of the cases resulted in no change and no cost to the town. On August 8th, the governor signed into law new income limits for the senior citizen and disability exemptions. And the change would increase the maximum income amount from $29,000 to $50,000 to receive a 50% discount. This change is subject to local option by the county, the towns, and the school districts. And I'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of the report. The 2023 renewals for our senior citizen and disability exemptions were mailed in September. The deadline for all exemptions is March 1st, as usual, for next year, 2023. And the income is calculated as received. We are holding them for processing because we're waiting to see what those income levels do, because they would apply for next year if they're changed. Otherwise, we'd have to redo the work. All other exemption renewals for 2023 will be mailed in December. All sales that occurred between July 1 of 2021 through July 1 of 2022 have been reviewed and submitted to the state by their September 2nd deadline. And those are the sales that the state will review and analyze the sales to determine the town's equalization rate or their level of assessment, which will be on the 2023 assessment roll. The assessor's fall conference was very informative and well attended. The classes attended were state update reports, sales review verification and corrections, Airbnb and its effects on valuation, and data collection issues and resolution. The requests for reimbursement forms have been completed and forwarded to the state as required within 30 days. And because I went to Cornell for 4 days and I got 12 hours of credit at the fall conference, I'm back in the good graces of the state. Everyone got a little behind because of the classes being canceled during the pandemic. Also, there was a little packet, and you don't have to make a decision on this right away. If you make a decision sometime over the next month, I'll give you an idea. We just need to know what you're anticipating as far as that senior citizen income level limit, because we have to put all these exemptions into the system for next year. So included in your little packet, it's a little email from the county director, and he's showing the present amount, the income sliding scale for the senior citizen limited exemption, which is the county level, and what the proposed change is. And it hasn't changed since 2006, so it's a huge jump. Okay, if you look at those numbers, it's a huge jump. The second page is where the town of Lysander is currently at. We are not at the same level as the county with our income limits. So the sliding scale for Lysander is different, and you can see the amounts on that page. Included for information is also the town of Van Buren, because, and it doesn't matter, you know, you don't have to be the same, it's entirely up to you, but right now Van Buren and Lysander are the same, and neither town is at, we're like one step behind where the county currently is, those with those income limits. And the last pages, one is Lysander and one is Van Buren, just for information, but it tells you the number of exemptions that we have for senior citizen, for that senior citizen limited income. Disability, there's a handful, but that doesn't make a huge difference. It's primarily the senior citizen exemption that we have more of. And you can see the exemption amounts in the columns to the right of the page. The county exemption amounts, and this is just for the town of Lysander, you can see how that, what their total is, and what our city town exemption amount is. So if you decided that you wanted as a board to raise the income limits to match where the county is, you can see the difference that it would make in our exemption value. And the way that works, everyone else in the town would pay more that didn't have the exemption, because that exemption value is picked up by everyone else that doesn't have the exemption. So this is for your information. If you have questions, reach out to me. If you make a decision or give me a feel for what you're thinking within the next month, it's perfectly fine. At this point, I can report to you that based on an estimate that they did for the county, 60% of our seniors that are 65 years and older would receive 50% exemption if the county went to the new amount. And the exemption amount for the county, and this is, you can't really tell 100%, it's an estimated amount. It would go from $330 million in exempt value with the county for just the senior exemption to $732 million. And the difference would be over $400 million in exempt value. So at this point, the county is not anticipating doing anything in for this 2020, for next year, for 2023. They are anticipating maybe looking at a stepped program to take little baby steps, not this year, but you know, for next year, but maybe the year after, and see how much of an impact it has on the rates, and then maybe doing another step. But you basically have the option to do nothing or to change to, you know, to where the county is, At this point, the town of Salina are the only ones that have passed the new limits. And they did that to get rid of their medical reimbursement, because Salina had years and years ago had the medical reimbursement as part of their local option, their local law. So to get rid of that, they went to the higher limit, but the people, the property owners are gonna lose the benefit of that medical reimbursement. So that's the offset there in Salina.
And Teresa, regardless of what program we do or which one we adopt or change or not, how does the program work? Is there an application that
Yes. It's actually the senior citizen limited income and the disability exemption. The senior citizen exemption is for people that are 65 years of age and older, and it's gross income. It's not taxable income like the STAR program. It's gross income, which includes total pensions, total Social Security, pretty much all income. There are a few weird exceptions, and they have to make an initial application, prove their age, prove their income.
And they send this to you?
Yes.
Okay.
And then.
Is it household income or just income?
No, it's the household income, total income, and. Every year, they have to renew with us. When I'm talking about sending out those renewals, they have to come in. We send them a renewal in September. They have till March 1st to bring it back. And they don't have to prove their age again, obviously, because they're not going to get younger. But they have to prove their income every year, either with a tax return or with their income. If they don't, because a lot of the seniors don't make enough money to file a tax, and they don't have to file a tax return. They have to file their 1099s, their income statements, and they have to complete a worksheet where they sign and say that they are attesting that this is their income and that they weren't required to file a tax return. And this is something that our office does every year and grants the exemptions based on that sliding scale. And that's how it works. Mm-hmm. The disability exemption is for people that are under 65 and they have they're on Social Security disability, and it's the same thing, only you have to have the disability award letter, the initial application, and they also have to renew it every year.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Well, I just had one. So when you said the options, so we could choose to do what the county does or choose to go?
You have basically three options.
Okay.
You can choose to do nothing, which is what the county's gonna do for 2023, from what the understanding that I've gotten from multiple directions. You can choose, because we're already behind where the county, we're already below where the county is, you can choose to take that step, and you would see the difference in the exemption value on that report that I just gave you. And, or you could choose to step up to where the county is and go beyond where the county is. Those are your choices. And like I said, you don't have to do it right away. You know, by the end of the month, I believe the real property director is actually meeting with school district business administrators to explain this whole thing. I think he said the last week in October.
Okay.
Because it's all entirely local option.
And if we do this next year, like if we wanted to do a step like the county's thinking, we could,
yes.
We could do that also.
Yes, you know? Once the county decides if they want to go a little higher, but at this point we're below where the county is.
Right, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
And food for thought.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. Ms. Falcone, what do you have?
I'm all set this evening, thank you.
Okay. Before we move on to the regular agenda items, we didn't have time for the ARPA discussion during our work session. Mr. Rowe, do you want to?
No, that's fine.
Okay.
You've been here long enough. You got okay. My email, I explained. I just put it down on a spreadsheet.
Okay.
You know, show what we have talked about.
Okay.
And other possibilities we can discuss.
Sure.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. Moving on to regular agenda items.
May I have a motion to adopt local law number 3 of 2022 regarding the installation of traffic stop signs on Timber Banks Parkway eastbound and westbound at the Forest Ridge Lane, Tall Tree Lane intersection?
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to hold a public hearing to adopt a local law to override the tax levy limit established in General Municipal Law 3C on Thursday, October 20, 2022 at 7 p.m. in Lysander Town Hall. This resolution shall authorize the town clerk to advertise for same.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. We are going to table motion C because Mr. Rivasigno just received the agreement with West Phoenix. Wait a minute, that's the that's the fire. Wait a minute.
It's just hold for on. The public hearing.
Hold on. You know what? I thought that was I thought was that the other the sewer
the water.
We didn't have that one on, right?
No, because you
okay. All right. My mistake. We aren't gonna table that. When I read it fast, I thought it was our sewer agreement and Mr. Rivasigno just got that tonight. So motion C. May I have a motion to hold a public hearing to hear citizens for or against the 2023 fire protection agreement by and between the town of Lysander and Enterprise Fire Company number 1, West Phoenix Fire Protection Agreement on Thursday, October 20, 2022 at 7 p.m. in Lysander Town Hall and to authorize the town clerk to advertise for same.
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to authorize the supervisor to sign the SPCA cruelty agreement effective January 1, 2023 through December 31, 2023.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussion?
Now this, I just have a question. This is just for, this isn't our, is this our annual agreement that we have with them, or is this just for a part of, okay.
Yeah, but there's two. It's the cruelty and what's the other one?
Just our regular contract with the dog control.
Okay.
Anybody else? Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to authorize the supervisor to sign change order number 1 for the swale and stormwater pond maintenance project in the amount of $958.75. That was necessary due to the wet weather conditions.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to approve the first and final payment for the swale and stormwater pond maintenance project in the amount of $39,808.75 as recommended by the town engineer's consultant.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Any discussion?
So is that, how does the ENF work together? Is it, we're adding $958 to this?
Yeah, the original contract amount was below the, was $958.75 below the
$39,808.75. Okay.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to set the punch list securities for River Grove Phase 2 development of $27,000 as recommended by the town engineer's consultant.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Why don't you explain that one?
So this is the River Grove development off of between Drake's Landing and Glacier Ridge on the east side of Drake's Landing. This is the one that we approved it. The builder or the developer did build the road to town specifications, but the builder was tasked with doing destructive testing on the piece of private road that would need to be taken for us to take dedication of the roadway. The developer was not able to come to agreement with the homeowners association, so at this point in time he is not offering to dedicate the roadway to the town of Lysander and is only asking us to take dedication of the storm sewer and sanitary sewer.
Okay.
Are there houses being built? There's the two houses that were actually the lots front, the old section, that were, so no improvements were needed to get those two in and out. I know he has four of the lots in the new section sold. So he is trying to file his final plat so he can start construction on those houses by our town code requirements. We have to take dedication of the utilities before he's allowed to, the planning board chairman's allowed to sign the final plat and have him, the developer, file the final plat at the county clerk's office. So this is the first step in that process. Provided that he gets his securities to us in a timely fashion, at the next meeting we would actually take dedication of the sanitary sewer and the storm sewer development.
Are they already in?
Oh yeah.
Is the road in?
Yeah.
So
we're not taking the road though.
We're not taking the road because we can't plow the road without turning around on a private drive.
Right. That's a new section, so
correct,
going into
yep.
So they weren't able to resolve that.
They were not able to come to an agreement between the developer and the homeowner association.
Okay. Do the residents moving into those?
They get a statement at closing.
Okay. That it's private?
Just like all the other residents did.
Okay.
And it's filed right.
See, I wasn't there with the other ones. I want to make sure that moving forward, that it's clearly stated what is happening here.
It's filed right with the deed.
Okay.
At closing, they're aware of it before closing, right?
Their lawyers should make them aware of it,
yes.
Right. I mean, ultimately, they're on a private road.
Yes.
Right. Well, we've had a lot of issues with them with the existing portion wanting us to take dedication of the road, and we can't do it.
Right. You know, it wasn't built to town spec.
Yeah, it's not
so do we ever think that will be resolved with the HOA or?
That won't.
Oh, okay, we have the developer right here.
Mr. Byrne.
My name is Dan Byrne with Elvin Homes. I hate to interrupt when you're on a roll.
No, that's all right. No, we got
to. And I have a couple other points that are also related to the project. Through your town engineer, I was contacted with the prospect that if I built the road to a public standard, that perhaps a section of the private road could also be dedicated so your plows can go in. I made that offer to the HOA board members, and they unwisely didn't accept the offer. They think they have some type of leverage in this situation, like it's all or nothing. And I think the board members have actually lost sight of their fiduciary obligation to all the other residents in that community. I said to them, 33% of a public road is better than nothing, because you're going to eventually have to repair all this road someday. They had an annual meeting about 2 weeks ago. I brought the matter up at the annual meeting. I said, let me get something straight. Under no circumstances will Tulip Tree, the section that I haven't developed yet, be built to a public standard, because I'm not willing to re-engineer it and redesign it. It just happened to be that the road that we installed was within the town's specifications for geometry, and it was no problem building it with a vertical profile that would match. And my thought was, I don't have to dedicate it today. This offer can hopefully remain in perpetuity, that someday they'll reconsider. Although I think the town's offer was very fair. I communicated to the town, my preference would have been for it to be a public road. But when I bought the property, I knew well that I was getting into a situation that was a private road. And I make all our home buyers aware of that.
So it's crystal clear to them that and I know you can only give them the information, you can't make them understand. I understand that, but I mean, that's clearly marked in there and that's brought up to them. So because we have the homeowners in the other section that's come to every person on this board multiple times and want us to take dedication of that section of road, and we just can't do it. So
with any association, you have a very vocal leadership. They take charge, they run with it, and then you have non-participatory members. And I think the vocal leadership just thinks they have some leverage here. They've talked to so many different town officials regarding this that they've got eight different stories why you can't take the road. They haven't really quite considered the fact that you won't take the road. You don't need to take the road, and the geometry is just not conducive to a wide plow. You know, perhaps if they were willing to give up some of their property where you could reshape the road, you would reconsider, but I just don't.
The houses in the middle of
what
prevent the cul-de-sac is really the problem.
You prevent that.
You can't get around that cul-de-sac with our plow truck.
Incline,
their driveway inclines, which
you just can't effectively plow that road with the equipment that we have safely.
I just wanted to make sure that, you know, so moving forward, you know, if it comes to us, we can say no. We know that you were made notice of that, and okay.
If you'll indulge me, this off topic but related to the same subdivision, we submitted an application for this community to be considered for next year's parade homes. We weren't the only applicant in your town. There's two applicants in your town. There's even a possibility that both applicants have a parade site and we shuttle people between the sites. I think it's, assuming we get enough builder participation, there'll be a nice opportunity for parade homes in the town of Lysander. I don't think that's ever happened.
That would be great.
We appreciate the town's support. On another note, directed directly to the supervisor and the people that are involved in planning, I attended the county executive's luncheon today, he had a meeting where he shared with realtors and builders what's going on with the Micron plant. I'm part of a task force for the Home Builders Association. We're going to be approaching towns. Yours is at the top of the list, along with the town of Clay, regarding going over your town ordinance, subdivision regulations, zoning regulations, showing you where we think it would be more user-friendly to developers and builders. We're going to towns that we think would be cooperative and would be invitive of growth. We're going to avoid the towns that we'd be wasting our times with. We hope that we can show some towns the way, how we can get some better regulations for density, and then other towns will see that some towns took the lead and other towns would then like to follow. What we have in mind is looking at your cluster regulations, looking at your sections of your zoning so we can get some more density, and looking at an overlay zoning map. Instead of you considering your zoning on a parcel by parcel basis, do one overlay map where you might see where you would like to see growth to occur, have one general public hearing where you adopt the overlay map. So when you consider zone changes after that, you're not dealing with every NIMBY not being aware that you've already considered their parcel. And you're sending a message to developers, these are pieces that we would be more interested in seeing rezone.
I think that's something that should be done sooner than later, because we got our comprehensive land use plan that I know they're close to completing, and that would be a big part of it. Now, we certainly have time to look at it, but I would suggest that you contact the chairman of that the club, Jack Corey. I think you know Jack, right? I think I would contact him and just have a conversation soon.
We're looking forward to work. I mean, this town has obviously been identified as a town with a lot of growth, a great school district. I grew up here. I live here. There's another developer who's done a lot of work here. We're trying to set a roadmap where this land development can occur. And we consider ourselves a stakeholder. We know what works and what doesn't work. We'd rather not see us not at the table, so then you have spent a lot of time adopting regulations that still don't work. Radisson's a good example. That's a good footprint. We get a lot of density there.
I think you should start with him, and I would do that soon, because they're moving on that. That's
almost
good. You're ready to go to printing. So I would suggest you make that phone call tomorrow.
I was going to say we actually got to a point today of the format for printing. So
yeah. So I would give them a call tomorrow.
Yeah, I must have missed all your invites.
Yeah, and then we'll have further discussions.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Okay. So I can't remember if we moved it. Okay. any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May I have a motion to set the maintenance guarantee for the utilities included in the River Grove Phase 2 development of $18,950, 25% of the project value as estimated by the town engineering consultant.
I'll move that.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. May a motion authorize the supervisor to sign the CHA Engineering Services proposal for the highway garage petroleum bulk storage tank closure project in the amount not to exceed $10,800.
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Okay, so with that $10,800, is that included in the $30,000 overall?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carried. I don't see any reason for an executive session tonight. May I have a motion to adjourn?
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Meeting adjourned.